Disunity. What sword and fire could not do among the Czech believers, a lack of unity brought about by the late 1400s, the trouble began with money and prestige. During their first years at Kunwald and in southern Bohemia, whoever joined the unity of brothers left his fortune behind. Knights and nobles gave up their titles to become simple followers of Christ. Of these, the Baron Strakota of Orlis near Kisberg left a shining example. Not only did he give up his castle, he took up bookkeeping and began to work in mill. All who knew him respected him as a wise and godly man. Jan Koska and his wife, the owners of Lidomisla, also became converted and gave their property to Bohus, their son. Then Bohus wished to join the church too, and things became complicated. A large number of unity families lived at Lidomisla. By asking Bohus Koska to get rid of his estate, they would have put themselves on the street. Could this be fair, they asked themselves? What if all our barons should get converted? Would we all have to move all the time? A brother from Watik, also named Rehoff, wrote a tract on the civil power that, like Petra Chelsicky's books, warned against any acceptance of government officials, knights, or barons into the brotherhood. The bishop, Matej of Kunwald, stood with him. So did many more. But to follow Christ in a feudal society did not look easy to the families living and working in the town of Lidomisla itself. Not only did the problem of Bohus Koska's membership face them, because nearly everyone in the town belonged to the church, they faced the question of who to elect for town councillors, judges, and policemen. Every feudal estate was responsible to keep its own order. Should we have a worldly and unconverted minority rule over all of us? The people of Lidomisla asked. Would it not be better to make responsible decisions ourselves? Bohus Koska, owner of the estate, pushed for unity members to become its officials and could not understand what held them back. Neither could others. A prominent Hussite priest wrote in 1492, "There have been, and still are, people among us who refuse to accept office as town councillor or any other official position. They say they do not want to administer justice, basing their action on the command of Christ. Judge not that you be not judged," which they, of course, interpret in their own way. But if these brothers are indeed so much better than the rest of us, if they are indeed lovers of justice and truth, why should they not take positions of authority to deal out fair and Christian justice, so that righteousness may be established among us? I think it is perverse of them to regard the rest of us as unbelievers, and that they should be punished for it. By trusting in themselves alone, they insult their neighbors and cut themselves off from other Christians devoted to God's truth. At Lidomisl, brothers of the Unity heard this criticism and felt bad. They felt they should do their part as responsible citizens. But how could you be judges and counselors without exercising violence? Bishop Matej and those with him asked. How could you hold civil office and not swear oaths? The brothers at Lidomisl did not know. But when their bishop suggested they leave their trades in town and go back to living as shepherds and field workers, they protested. We cannot all live in the country, a soapmaker answered. Cows do not give soap, and even if they did, men who work with them get appointed as judges and counselors too. During the time these questions troubled the unity of brothers, new faces appeared among them. By now, 50 or more years after his death, Petr Kelsicky's writings were well known. Scholars looked through them, and even though considered heretical, copies of them lay in important libraries. It was there, in the library of the university at Prague, that Lucas, a young Hussite, discovered them in the 1470s. Lucas not only read Petr Kelsicky, he visited the brothers at Mount Carmel, Mlada Boleslav, to find out how they lived and believed. They impressed him, and with a circle of scholarly friends, he moved there to join them after his graduation in 14. This brought more trouble. The owner of Mlada Boleslav was a woman, the Baroness Johanka Towakowska Zikrajku, who also admired the unity. With the coming of Lucas and his friends, she found the believers' community on her lands even more attractive. No longer did it only consist of simple farmers and tradesmen. With scholars and gifted educators among them, the Baroness felt there might be room for her, with her title and fortune as well. The brothers were not sure. After many meetings, council, and prayer, they finally called leaders from the entire movement to Brandis nad Orliki, the early 1490s. Some nobles, interested in joining, came too. So did the scholar Lucas, and his friends from Mlada Boleslav and Lidomisla. All troublesome issues came up for a vote in which Brother Matej, unwilling to cause division, refused to take part. Then the brothers drew up a statement of compromise. They recommended that no one should take government office of his own free will, that church members should not keep a tavern, go to war, judge others, or apply torture and capital punishment. But if the state or their position in society demanded it, then no one would judge them for it. Every case should be evaluated on its own. Much would be left to individual conscience, and there was to be no more stirring up of trouble about things of this nature. The unity of brothers by this time was directed by an inner council elected to help Bishop Matej. These men, with the approval of others gathered at Brandy's, passed a further resolution. If anyone's conscience does not permit him to become a town councillor, a judge, or to hold another civil office, he should not feel pressured into doing it by the fact that the Brotherhood allows it on certain conditions. Rather, if he holds to his conviction and wants to suffer for it, he shall have the liberty of doing so, only on the condition that he does not criticize those who feel and do otherwise. He should not consider himself any better than those who cooperate with the government and thereby avoid suffering. The Inner Council dismissed the brothers at Brandy's with a solemn warning not to go home and talk about controversial issues among themselves. If anyone had a complaint, they said, he should come directly to them or to Brother Matej, the bishop. If, after thinking this over, or for any other reason, a brother should object to what we have decided, he should neither speak or act, neither openly or in secret, against it. Rather, he should bring his complaint in person or writing. Anyone who disregards this instruction should be admonished, and if he refuses to accept correction and keeps causing a disturbance and division, he shall be held back from communion. If he still remains of Bex the view, he shall be expelled from his congregation, and if that does not turn him back from his wickedness, he shall be expelled from the unity of brothers itself. Brock, PG 131. Two men made their way home from the big meeting at Brandy's with heavy hearts. They were Amos Stekinski, a collector of beeswax from Vodnany close to Chelsis, and his co-worker, Jakub. Their hearts told them that the unity of brothers, in deciding to relax its position on civil office and to allow the wealthy and powerful to become part of it, had made a terrible mistake. No sooner did they come home to southern Bohemia, into the area where Pierre Valdes spent his last years and where Petr Chelsiki had taught, than they began to write, discuss the matter with their friends, and pray. Amos wrote a tract, describing in simple Czech how Christ rejected Satan's offer of worldly power, and why his followers do the same. He explained why it was right for unbelieving authorities to use power in the world, but why it did not belong to the kingdom of heaven. The New Testament, Amos wrote, is the sole authority of Christ's followers, but the Old Testament is no an authority at all, the difference being that Christ has now established his kingdom on earth. Hundreds of believers in southern Bohemia and elsewhere stood with Amos and Jakub. For a time, even Brother Matej, the bishop, returned to the church's former position. He declared the compromise of Brandy's null and void and dismissed the inner council, but it did not last. The brothers of Lidomysl and Mata Boleslav, chief among them Lucas and his educated friends, criticized the old way. Rihoff and Petr Chelsiki were good men, they said, but their teaching was off balance and impractical. It served a generation of farmers well, but it did not fit intellectuals and people in higher walks of life. Within months, confusion and unrest overtook the unity of brothers as never before. Matej and his conservative friends resigned their leadership, and a team of trained theologians, Lucas among them, took over. A new inner council, hostile to the old way, reinforced the compromise of Brandy's. To that they added a decree stating that Rehoff and Petr Chelsiki's writings, for teaching a works religion and not leading the church to trust in the cross of Christ, should no longer be considered authoritative. They allowed Matej to keep his office, but only as a figurehead. His duties they restricted to officiating at ordinations and to serving as moderator in church meetings. During the Lent season of 1495, Matej and Lucas made a final attempt to keep the South Bohemians in the unity of brothers. They met with Amos Stekinski and those who agreed with him in Jakub's house, not far from the historic village of Chelsis. All day they discussed the way of Christ and the way of the world. It turned dark. The time for the evening meal came and went, but the men reached no agreement. Matej had firmly decided to keep the church together at all costs. Lucas pushed for a more open and balanced understanding, spending much time explaining what Christ meant when he forbade the swearing of oaths, that there are three kinds of oaths, the false, the careless, and the true, and that Christ only condemned the first two, but the South Bohemians would not be reconciled. No matter how grandly Matej and Lucas promised their views full toleration in the church, the Mensae Strana, the little group, had no desire to be back in a net with the rich, the powerful, and those who defend their lives with the sword. For this insubordination and sowing of discord, the leaders of the church finally excommunicated Amos Stekinski, Jakub, and all who supported them, and the unity's disunity became final. The big group, once free of constant criticism by the little group, the Vetsi Strana, the big group, as people called it, made bold and rapid moves towards society and the world. Lucas, with the support of the Unity's publishing house at Mata Boleslav, wrote voluminous works defending the oath and participation in war. He explained why turning the other cheek is only a spiritual, not a physical concept, and following his teaching that to hold possessions is morally neutral, members of the Unity began to see wealth and prestige as signs of the blessing of God. Along with this, Lucas returned to John Huss and John Wycliffe's teaching of a threefold society, rulers, clergy, and commoners. Christ did not come to restructure society, he said, but to correct its abuses, and the idea of correcting them by force did not bother him. To kill and destroy the enemies of the Lord, providing it is done justly and without hatred, is not inconsistent with showing them love. Moderation should, of course, be used, but I cannot say it is wrong to go about with daggers. Matej himself wrote in defense of what the unity now practiced, "We do not forbid you to lead the rich toward voluntary poverty, to snatch them from civil offices that endanger their souls, and lead them toward a more perfect life and closer imitation of Christ. But that is not for all men. Christ said it is difficult, but not impossible for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven." Some, too, who believed in Christ, such as the Roman centurion, were men with authority. Against the little group's accusation that higher learning and the study of theology had corrupted the church, a theologian in the big group wrote a book on the learned men, and Lucas expressed disgust at the primitive writings and viewpoints of unlearned innovators. In another meeting of its leaders, the unity decided to tolerate tavern ownership and liquor brewing among them, providing its members did not drink to excess, and Lucas' statement on civil power became their own. Civil power, with its laws and punishments, may be exercised in our unity and in the Holy Church. A lord owning estates, castles, fortresses, and towns may be accepted into our unity without having to relinquish the sword, and may become a brother while continuing to order punishments and executions. It is not impossible to hang a man while having love towards him in one's heart. After Matej died and Lucas became bishop of the unity, he reintroduced elaborate rituals, silver and gilt communion vessels, and embroidered robes for its priests. Financed by the baron, Bohus Koska, by now a member of the church, he and other delegates traveled to Greece, Asia Minor, and Europe to find like-minded people and support for their actions. But they found none. And in a later historian's words, out of Bohemian Puritans who followed Petra Chelsicky rather than Jan Hus, who admired celibacy like Paul, who swore no oaths, who held no civil office, who indulged in no luxury, who tolerated no wealth, who charged no interest on money, who took no part whatsoever in war, had arisen well-to-do capitalists, honorable householders, very successful businessmen, respected town officials and sworn in, very active 45 generals and statesmen.